Alan Grant had found the first clutch of dinosaur eggs in Montana in 1979, and many more in the next 2 years. But he hadn't gotten around to publishing his findings until 1983. His paper, with its report of a herd of 10,000 duck-billed dinosaurs living along the shore of a vast inland sea, building communal nests of eggs in the mud, raising their infant dinosaurs in the herd, made Grant a celebrity overnight. The notion of maternal instincts and giant dinosaurs, and the drawings of cute babies poking their snouts out of the eggs, had appeal around the world. Grant was besieged with requests for interviews, lectures, books. Characteristically, he turned them all down, wanting only to continue his excavations. But it was during those frantic days of the mid-1980s that he was approached by the InGen Corporation with a request for consulting services. "Had you heard of InGen before?" Morris asked. "No." "How did they contact you?"
"Telephone call. There was a man named Gennaro or Giannino, something like that."
Morris nodded.
"Donald Gennaro," he said. "He's the legal counsel for InGen." "Anyway, he wanted to know about eating habits of dinosaurs, and he offered me a fee to draw up a paper for him."
Grant drank his beer, set the can on the floor.
"Gennaro was particularly interested in young dinosaurs, infants and juveniles, what they ate. I guess he thought I would know about that."
"Did you?"
"Not really, no. I told him that. We had found lots of skeletal material, but we had very little dietary data. But Gennaro said he knew we hadn't published everything, and he wanted whatever we had. And he offered a very large fee, $50,000.
Morris took out a tape recorder and set it on the end table.
"You mind?"
"No, go ahead."
"So, Gennaro telephoned you in 1984. What happened then?"
"Well," Grant said, "you see our operation here. $50,000 would support 2 full summers of digging. I told him I'd do what I could."
"So you agreed to prepare a paper for him?"
"Yes."
"On the dietary habits of juvenile dinosaurs?"
"Yes."
"You met Gennaro?"
"No, just on the phone."
"Did Gennaro say why he wanted this information?"
"Yes," Grant said. "He was planning a museum for children, and he wanted to feature baby dinosaurs. He said he was hiring a number of academic consultants and named them. There were paleontologists like me, and a mathematician from Texas named Ian Malcolm, and a couple of ecologists. A systems analyst. Good group."
Morris nodded, making notes. "So you accepted the consultancy?"
"Yes. I agreed to send him a summary of our work, what we knew about the habits of the duck-billed hadrosaurs we'd found."
"What kind of information did you send?"
Morris asked.
"Everything. Nesting behavior, territorial ranges, feeding behavior, social behavior, everything."
"And how did Gennaro respond?"
"He kept calling and calling, sometimes in the middle of the night. Would the dinosaurs eat this? Would they eat that? Should the exhibit include this?" "I could never understand why he was so worked up. I mean, I think dinosaurs are important too, but not that important. They've been dead 65 million years. You'd think his calls could wait until morning."
"I see," Morris said.
"And the $50,000?
Grant shook his head.
"I got tired of Gennaro and called the whole thing off. We settled up for 12,000. That must have been about the middle of 85.
Morris made a note.
"And InGen, any other contact with him?"
"Not since 1985.
"And when did the Hammond Foundation begin to fund your research?"
"I'd have to look," Grant said, "but it was around then, mid-80s.
"And you know Hammond as just a rich dinosaur enthusiast?"
"Yes." Morris made another note.
"Look," Grant said, "if the EPA is so concerned about John Hammond and what he's doing, the dinosaur sites in the north, the amber purchases, the island in Costa Rica, why don't you just ask him about it?"
"At the moment, we can't," Morris said.
"Why not?" Grant said. "Because we don't have any evidence of wrongdoing," Morris said. "But personally, I think it's clear John Hammond is evading the law."
"I was first contacted," Morris explained, "by the Office of Technology Transfer. The OTT monitors shipments of American technology which might have military significance.
They called to say that InGen had two areas of possible illegal technology transfer. First, InGen shipped three Cray XMPs to Costa Rica. InGen characterized it as transfer within corporate divisions and said they weren't for resale, but OTT couldn't imagine why the hell somebody'd need that power in Costa Rica. Three Crays, Grant said. Is that a kind of computer? Morris nodded. Very powerful supercomputers. To put it in perspective, three Crays represent more computing power than any other privately held company in America. And InGen sent the machines to Costa Rica. You have to wonder why. I give up. Why? Grant said. Nobody knows. And the hoods are even more worrisome, Morris continued. Hoods are automated gene sequencers, machines that work out the genetic code by themselves. They're so new that they haven't been put on the restricted list yet. But any genetic engineering lab is likely to have one if it can afford the $500,000 price tag. He flipped through his notes. Well, it seems InGen shipped 24 hood sequencers to their island in Costa Rica. Again, they said it was a transfer within divisions and not an export, Morris said. There wasn't much that OTT could do. They're not officially concerned with use, but InGen was obviously setting up one of the most powerful genetic engineering facilities in the world in an obscure Central American country, a country with no regulations. That kind of thing has happened before.